Sports, episode 89. Nicholas Cowie, everything burning this week on the Tech of Sports. Nicholas Cowie. Want to welcome everyone tonight, and we're going to talk about something we haven't talked about before. We're going to talk about birding and the specific event that's coming up. Entertaining, informative guest. Cowie, he's in outside of Austin, Texas. Started as an Eagle Scout, and he's progressed through the ranks. He's worked at nature parks. He's a lead compiler for the Lost Pines Christmas Bird Count. We're going to talk about a lot about that. That's an annual bird survey of the Audubon Society. He teaches. He does great work with students in nature. Nicholas, tell us, got involved in your love of birding and nature, and a little more about yourself.
Well, kind of started off as a youth. You know, a lot of kids get a sit with dad and read children's books, but my dad busted out the old Golden Guide to Birds, and I don't remember much, but I'm told by the time I was about 6 years old, I could ID 54 waterfowl by silhouette and by picture, and they tested me out and took me to the zoo, and apparently I passed. But being outdoors is a big part of my life, and I like to observe all kinds of wildlife, but capturing bird data and just observing behavior in the field is a whole lot of fun, a great way to spend time outdoors.
Yeah, no 2 days are ever the same either, I'm sure. Would you classify being a sport?
There are different types of folks that enjoy to do, different types of wildlife viewing and watching. It's definitely a sport because you have to get outdoors to do it. And, there are some couch birders that can definitely bird out the window of their homes, and backyard birders are an important part of data as well. Sport definitely involves skill and equipment, and you're not going to be an effective birder if you don't have the right equipment, if you don't have a good pair of binoculars and a field guide and skill in using it. You don't always have the luxury of a bird advertising the right angle for you, and it takes experience that takes time to develop. And with over 900 species in North America, there's always new challenges of sparrows and different songbirds, hawks in flight. Hawks are a little difficult when they're about 4,000 feet elevation. So there's a lot of tricks that you can learn from other folks as well. The competitive side of birding is definitely there. There's nothing like a bunch of folks in the field trying to compete in a 24-hour time period to see as many species as they can. And a well-publicized event in May of 2013, a new record was set by a team from the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, 294 species in one day. And that was here in Texas. They set that record.
That is a big number. That's a big number to keep track of. I would call myself, Nicholas, a casual birder. And actually, I was on a trip this summer in a bird refuge in southern Alabama. And we spent a day birding and learning about it. And I heard statistics from the gentleman leading the group I was. I mean, birding is a huge activity. There are millions and millions of people. It is a growing and big number of birders here in this country.
Actually, the number from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service report a couple years ago is 20%. 47 million Americans.
Wow.
And the economic impact of that many people in the field purchasing equipment and travel expenditures amounts to over $40 billion. And that's a bit of an impact on our economy as well, to have that many people enjoying a sport outside. And so it definitely has an impact.
Yeah, I think he said, as far as being a non-contact sport and a non-major sport, and birding just ranks, I guess, on the in the spectrum, like you said, of what the economic number of people involved. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You're breaking up a little bit there, but if the question is in regards to the economic impact, I think birding weighs heavily compared to other sports, because it's not something you're going to see the Super Bowl of birds on TV, but it's something people enjoy on their own and doesn't get a lot of publicity.
Yeah, all ages, all economic impacts can enjoy birding.
They definitely can, but the average age of a birder in the United States is 53. And it's the hope that in some areas of the U.S., we see a growing trend of younger birders in partiality because of the accessibility to apps and online tools that help make birding more accessible, easier to learn, and kind of tech friendly. It's redefines tweeting and Facebooking, and you have eBirds, TextBirds, and other types of bird log data. And it's been increasing in the past decade, the number of people that like to use their phones in the field. You know, used to in the old days, you would keep a record of all the birds you saw, and sometimes you would share that data. Well, now you can do it straight from your cell phone while you're in the field. It takes your GPS coordinates, the species you saw, and I think the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology is keeping track of a database of over 200 million observations. And that's amazing. That's a lot of data. So they've got a large team of smart folks that are trying to make that data applicable with maps and help people understand the importance of contributing to real scientific data in the field from the convenience of your smartphone.
And I would say, don't sell yourself short. I would say it's also the popularity is growing due to people like you and what's going on in Lost Pines, at the Lost Pines Resort and the area around there, that you're really encouraging young kids to appreciate birding and nature activities.
Yeah, I think what we see about 9,000 kids a year come through our park, and I work at McKinney Ruffs Nature Park with the LCRA, and we get a lot of opportunities to interact with kids, and one of my jobs is to make the natural resources of our region come to life and try to help kids have a better understanding of the role they play in being a steward and conserving those resources. Birds are good indicators of the health of the environment, and they're attracted to wetlands and areas that we need to take care of, not just for the birds, but for ourselves. Our own drinking water resources are the same types of resources that migratory birds and waterfowl depend on.
And we're with the foremost experts on birding here in the United States, Nicholas Cowie, and outside of Austin, Texas, in a beautiful part of the country. Nicholas, explain what's going to happen now Christmas time at Lost Pines with the bird count. Explain what goes on with that a little bit.
The Audubon Society has about 2,300 circles across the United States and the Western Hemisphere. Each of these circles is about 15 miles in diameter. And on a day between December 15th and early January, we pick a day, we go out, and we'll probably have 60 to 70 volunteer birders in this zone tabulating and observing birds. And last year, we got over 9,000 sightings and 134 species. So it varies from year to year, depending on the drought and the available food resources. But it's part of the way we can contribute by taking our observations and letting Audubon keep track of where certain birds are migrating. And some of them are here a little earlier or later. And sometimes we get species that don't occur here. Right now, there's a dusky-capped flycatcher, which is normally in Arizona and deep in Mexico. And it's just to our west in a state park in central Texas. And a lot of people are excited about that. So sometimes even a few species can really get everybody's feathers all ruffled up and get them excited to go out in the field. We have six pairs of nesting bald eagles. Three of those nesting bald eagles are within our 15-mile boundary circle. So we're guaranteed to get some nesting bald eagle sightings this December as well. And we have a workshop on the day preceding the bird count is December 21st. And on December 20th, we'll have a guest speaker from the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology talking to us about crow behavior. And he's banded over 4,000 crows. And we hope to learn a lot from Kevin McGowan. We also are going to have some workshops on bird calling and nature journaling and other outdoor activities. So it should be a fun time for folks that are beginner birders. They shouldn't feel intimidated. And for the expert birders, this is their time to shine and show their stuff.
And this all takes place in the general vicinity of the Hyatt Lost Pines Resort there in just outside of Austin, Texas, a place I've been to, a beautiful place. And just a great place for an event like this to happen, isn't it, Nicholas?
Well, it's really unique. a lot of bird counts don't happen being hosted by a resort that really claims ecotourism as one of their major draws. And the partnership with the Hyatt allows us to be able to have a good venue for putting on workshops and to launch the bird count from. It's right on the Colorado River, so we do a class and then take a little hike while the more experienced birders head out at 6 in the morning to go see as many birds as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the bald eagle briefly, Nicholas. Mm-hmm. It's the one animal that I am just in awe of when I see one in person. Are you still absolutely in awe and thrilled to see a bald eagle in person? It's just a fantastic animal.
Actually, I've studied bald eagles for a long time, and what I'm absolutely astounded by is their eyesight. And I know that if I can see them through a telescope, they're looking back at me without a telescope, no problem. They have 5 times the resolution that we do. They can focus in 2 areas at the same time. And I don't know if you knew this, but they have built-in liquid sunglasses. They have a polarizing fluid that can flush to the front of their eyes. And as they fly into the sunlight, they can turn on their polarizing sunglasses and deflect the glare of the sunlight. They see in color a lot better than we can, too, and see a rabbit from 2 miles away. So even the eyesight of the eagle is absolutely amazing. And we could learn a lot from the eagle in this one way. I'll tell you, the eagle, for every 17 to 18 failed attempts, finally catches the fish. And what an animal that demonstrates such determination. And, you know, he is so goal oriented that he will continue fishing until he finally gets his catch. But too many of us fail a couple times and just throw up our arms and give up. But bald eagle is a great symbol for our country that demonstrates the fortitude and the persistence that it takes to survive.
It really is. I know after I reach in a cookie jar about 3 times and I can't grab a cookie, Nicholas, I give up. So I'm not as determined as the bald eagle, evidently. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely be seeing those nesting bald eagles, and they are definitely a majestic bird. I agree with you.
Average person get involved in your bird count or maybe a bird count in their local area. Explain how that works.
Well, if you're not in the local area, there are bird count circles all across the United States. And a quick search on Google under the title CBC or Christmas Bird Count should probably take you to an Audubon webpage where you can find a circle near you. And I believe that's a title on the Audubon website is Find a Circle Near You. And so once you find that, it'll send you in the right direction.
That's something very good to check out. Christmas Bird Count. I guess if they put in CBC or Christmas Bird Count into Google, they will eventually get the information they want.
And make sure you type Audubon in.
Okay.
AUDUBON.
Sure. We're with Nicholas Cowie here, just an expert on birding and talking about the Lost Pines bird count and just birding and bird counts in general. Now, when I was on that one-day excursion in southern Alabama, Nicholas, the guide told us that birding also can be a very expensive hobby or sport. I mean, I guess like any sport, you can do it as cheaply or as expensive as you want, but kind of some of the expense involved, and it was a little staggering, some of what he was talking about.
Well, you can start off with a 200 set of binoculars, but then when you want to spend a couple $1,000s on some Swarovski optics or get a spotting scope that you can see a bird from 2 or 3 miles away and identify it, then you're going to have to pay a pretty penny for that. Travel expenses may also be an issue. For the serious birders, they have no problem dropping a plane ticket to the Galapagos. I've got a friend that likes to go to Malaysia or South America just to pick up 3 or 4 species on his list.
How many are on your list right now, Nicholas?
Well, actually, I don't keep a list. Not all birders keep a life list. There are different types of birders. There are life listers, and they are driven to go birding to add a species to their list. It's almost like collecting. Then there's bird chasers. Now, a bird chaser is on a special alert for certain species that they need on their list. And when that bird appears, they will come flying from around the nation to a certain location just to see that thing, check it out through their binoculars, and check it off their list. Maybe I'm more of a casual birder. I'm not as obsessed by the list or the number of birds that I do see. I'm more interested in behavioral observation and things that are just common in the area. Trying to take common birds and teach kids uncommon things about those birds, something that really grasps them, you know?
Sure. Sharing your knowledge. That's a great thing you're doing, Nicholas. And what's maybe somebody you've talked to or someone you've met, the person maybe with the most number of birds on their list that you can recall?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know that I can name names.
I don't name a name, just maybe a number of somebody you've talked with that, you know, what kind of number did he have on his list?
Most of the people that I talk to are concerned with how many birds did they see in a geographic region. Mm-hmm. For instance, a buddy of mine, Brush Freeman, is well known on the Texas E-List and the E-Birds as being one of the foremost birders in the state. And, of course, Brent Ortego is our state ornithologist, and he probably ranks right up there with some of our best birders in the state. Just a couple days ago, though, I talked with Chris Wood and his wife, Jessie, from the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology. Both of those were involved in the Team Sapsucker, which set the record here in Texas with 294 species in one day. You know, here in Texas, Matagorda County ranks as the number one bird count circle in the United States with diversity. We may have as many as over 330 species in one day seen at Matagorda.
And that's a lot. That's a full day if you're going to attempt to see that. So that sounds real interesting. Nicholas, what would you like to promote as far as a website or a how can people get a hold of you if they have questions? Do you have social media accounts? If they want to find out more information about what you're doing, how would they advise them to follow you or get in touch with you?
Oh, they can call me directly at McKinney Ruffs Nature Park at 512-303-5073. Or you can feel free to email me at ncowey@lcra.org. That's ncowey@lcra.org.
Great. That's a great way to get in touch with you. And also, they can just Google Hyatt Lost Pines Resort, and I'm sure they have information on their website as well, because they really get into that there. Lost Pines Resort, have a lot of conventions and lots of other activities, but that bird count is one of the biggest things they do all year, isn't it?
It definitely is, and I think the reason we're situated really well right there geographically is that you're sitting at the southern end of the grasslands, the Great Plains, so to speak, and we're on the western edge of the deciduous forests, the eastern woodlands, and then, of course, you have to the west the deserts and dry lands, and they kind of converge right here in central Texas. And it's the range limit of a lot of bird species. There are some species that just don't go much further west, south or east or west. That's just almost like a combination of ecosystems. And for some folks, it allows the diversity of being able to see a lot of different bird species within a very short area.
A couple other quick questions here. Can birding be dangerous?
I don't know. I don't have any stories personally of how birding could be dangerous. So I think the answer to that question is probably no.
As long as you're smart about things. Pretty safe sport, but also birding, like you said, has gone high tech. And how important has technology been in the last 5-10 years? And has that made it easier for people to see different species of birds and see things they wouldn't have seen before?
I'll tell you, the way technology has really helped birding is that there are some bird species that you may have completely missed. But if you see a bird and you post it on Text Birds or on some other social media, there's a Facebook page for some birds. Different states have their own versions. eBirders is, of course, the one that's being used worldwide right now. After you see a bird in the field, seconds later, everybody knows about it. And if it's a bird of concern, then you may have people flocking, no pun intended, to see the new sighting and make sure they record it. The other great thing about smartphones, used to, you could have Sibley's Guide, Peterson's, Audubon's Field Guide, Stokes, just a whole backpack full of bird guides with pictures from different angles and characteristics that really help you identify the birds. And now you've got all those guides on your smartphone. And what the books don't have that the smartphone has is sounds. So if you hear a sound in the field, now you can compare that sound with the digital recording of different birds from different territories and different types of calls. Sometimes when I'm in the field, half of my sightings are by sound and half are by sight. And so identifying birds by ear is pretty critical in woodlands where you can't always see the bird, but when you hear it, boy, that's just as good as gold if you know the sound.
I think one other thing that the smartphone or the tablet may have, Nicholas, is the ability to search very quickly through a book, wouldn't you? Or to try on air with a smartphone. I think the search features on there would be very helpful.
I've got to put a plug in for Cornell's app called Merlin. There are a lot of great apps, and I'm not selling apps tonight, but what I can tell you is that if you're not too sure about birding, you're concerned about the cost of some of the apps, the Cornell app called Merlin is free, and it asks you 5 questions. And from those 5 questions, it best identifies the bird you're looking at. And it's using all of the eBirders data that people have been sending in over the years. It uses the geographical location of your phone to find out what's there, the size of the bird, the general color, and it really points you in the right direction and helps steer you towards identifying the right species. There are a couple of other apps that are really worth mentioning. Princeton University is working on Bird Genie, which is supposed to integrate the microphone and be like a bird version of SoundHound or Shazam. I mean, if the bird's close enough, then when this app's completed, it is supposed to be able to at least get it in the right department or give you some suggested species that you can compare their sounds with. And that'll be really amazing to see how that works out. And there's currently a app called BirdSnap. And with BirdSnap, if you take a picture with your phone or a picture of a picture, then it'll analyze the bird's picture and give you the top 4 or 5 options. And sometimes it'll lead you astray, but a lot of times it can be a very helpful tool in the field. And Cornell's also working on a version of that for their app, Merlin, which will be able to accurately identify birds by a picture on your phone. And that's also a valuable tool that you don't have in the old field guides.
Sure. That would be a great learning tool for people getting involved in birding as well. Give your email one more time if people didn't catch it earlier on and how they can get in contact with you. And I know you'll respond to them because you love getting feedback from people. What's your email
Absolutely.
One more time?
It's ncowie, ncowey, @lcra.org.
That's great. And Nicholas, I always ask, we'll get you to make some bird sounds here in a second, but I always ask my guest one last question as we wrap up. What's the one gadget or piece of technology right now that you can't live without?
Tell you what, it's my smartphone. Yeah. When I'm in the field, I really like being able to use the smartphone to help me identify birds. And kind of a topic that people have different opinions on is using the phone as an electronic call. Now, this has to be done judiciously and with care. If you are in an area where there are endangered species nesting or any time in the nesting season, then it's strictly taboo to be using your phone for electronic calls to try to invoke a call. But if you're doing a bird survey in the wintertime, and you play an eastern screech owl, even in the daytime, you're bound to get a lot of songbirds come in. Songbirds and diurnal or daytime birds are attracted to owl sounds because they want to make sure everybody in the neighborhood knows that there's danger around. And so they come to pester the owl, and instead they find a recording playing, and you can include those birds in your bird count. And I would advise that people make sure before they do that, that they are with some experienced birders. They're not doing it at the wrong time or the wrong season. And in some parks, it may even be illegal to play electronic wildlife calls. But it can also be a useful tool to increase your sightings or to attract certain species to you. Nobody has a problem with pishing. Now, pishing is the term for making a little chattering sound with your own lips, and that's what people did before smartphones had accurate bird calls, is they would just go psh, 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 and then then you'd wait for a while and see who comes to investigate your sound.
It's a good, good term there, Nicholas. I'm glad if Amanda wouldn't have included in the little bio she sent on that you can make frog and owl sounds, I would never have asked you to do it. But can you do maybe a frog sound and an owl sound for us as we wrap up?
Those are good nocturnal sounds. Calling frogs is just about as fun as birds, and they're less picky, so they answer a lot more readily at nighttime. Of course, you know, you have people have probably heard the leopard frog. A leopard frog sounds like this. And of course, the bullfrog is a little bit larger, and he says, and the gray tree frog says, we also have a Gulf Coast toad, and they go, and the grand finale would be the eastern narrow-mouthed toad. They make a nasal whine. Now, I don't like to make a sound unless it's accurate enough to evoke a response from the similar species. But one funny story is that while calling for frogs close to a highway, I heard a truck hit those wake-up bumps on the side. You know, the little bumps that wake you up if you get too close. And it incited a riot of some bullfrogs because in the distance they heard what sounded like when the truck hit the bumps. And all of a sudden the bullfrogs, they said, it was wake up time. There was an intruder and they weren't going to have any of it.
That is fantastic. And can you give us maybe one owl, your favorite owl sound as we go out here, Nicholas?
Favorite owl sounds probably the barred owl. It sounds like he's saying, who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?
That is awesome. I'm sure when you're outside, you get a little bit of the echo with it too, and that even makes it sound a little better.
Yeah, well, you got to cup your hands, which over the microphone wouldn't work too well, and that gives it a deep guttural sound. And the kids always like it, you know, especially if somebody starts answering back, which is not too uncommon.
That is excellent. We'll leave it at there, Nicholas. Great having you on. Great expert and great advice. I'm glad we had this opportunity to talk an expert in birding like yourself. And thanks for coming on the Tech of Sports.
All right. Enjoyed being here. Thanks a lot.
Sure. So you've been listening to the Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.